And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, hope you all had a happy and safe Labor Day yesterday. Today's September the 7th, 250th day of the year. 115 days remain till the year's over with. Rich Forrest is back in the hospital. They had him home for a few days, but he had a second aneurysm, and now he's stable, I understand. On this day in 70 AD, a Roman army under Titus occupies and plunders Jerusalem. 878, Louis the Stammerer is crowned as King of West Francia by Pope John VIII. If the Pope says it, God ruled it. 1159, Pope Alexander III is chosen. 1191, the Third Crusade, the Battle of Arsuf. Richard I of England defeats Saladin at Arsuf. 1228, Holy Roman Emperor Frederick II lands in Acre, Israel, and starts the Sixth Crusade, which results in a peaceful restoration of the Kingdom of Jerusalem. Now, for those that are not familiar with the Kingdom of Jerusalem, also known as the Latin Kingdom of Jerusalem or the Frankish Kingdom of Jerusalem, it was a crusader state established in the southern Levant by Godfrey of Bouillon in 1099 at the end of the First Crusade. Kingdom lasted almost 200 years, from 1099 to 1291, when its last remaining possession, Acre, was destroyed by the Mamluks. Now, I think I've said before, the title King of Jerusalem is a hereditary title in European heraldry. One branch of my family had the title. In 1303, Guillaume de Nogaret takes Pope Boniface VIII prisoner on behalf of Philip IV of France. 1571, Thomas Howard, 4th Duke of Norfolk, is arrested for his role in the Ridolfi plot to assassinate Queen Elizabeth I of England. They were going to replace her with Mary, Queen of Scots, her cousin. And that's one of the reasons she ultimately ordered the death of Mary. Too great a temptation. 1620, the town of Kokkola was founded by King Gustavus Adolphus of Sweden. 1652, about 15,000 Han farmers and militia rebel against Dutch rule on Taiwan. 1695, Henry Every perpetrates one of the most profitable pirate raids in history with the capture of the Grand Mughal ship. In response, Emperor Aurangzeb threatens to end all English trading with India. That ship was one of the largest treasure ships that the India sent out. If I'm not mistaken, the Peacock Throne was on that ship. 1706, War of the Spanish Succession. The Siege of Turin ends, leading to the withdrawal of French forces from northern Italy. 1764, election of Stanislaw August Poniatowski as the last ruler of the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth. 1776, according to American Colonial Reports, Ezra Lee makes the world's first submarine attack in the Turtle, attempting to attach a time bomb to the hull of the HMS Eagle in New York Harbor. Now, the British don't have any records of this attack taking place, and I don't think the Turtle actually survived it. It was officially the world's first submersible with a documented record of use in combat. Built in 1775 by American David Bushnell, it was meant to be a means of attaching explosive charges to ships in a harbor, and they were going to use it against the Royal Navy. Connecticut Governor Jonathan Trimble recommended the invention to George Washington, who provided funds and support for the development and testing. Now, there were several attempts made using the Turtle to put explosives to the underside of British warships in New York Harbor. All failed, and the transport ship that supported the Turtle was sunk that year by the British with the submarine on board. Bushnell claimed eventually it had recovered the machine, but its final fate's really unknown. Now, modern replicas of the turtle have been constructed on display in the Connecticut River Museum, the U.S. Navy Submarine Force Library and Museum, the Royal Navy Submarine Museum, and the Oceanographic Museum in Monaco. I had heard a story that it actually went down on its last foray and took its crew with it. 1778, American Revolutionary War. France invades Dominica and the British West Indies before Britain's even aware of France's involvement in the war. 1812, French invasion of Russia. The Battle of Borodino, the bloodiest battle in the Napoleonic Wars, is fought near Moscow and results in a French victory. Unique, don't you think? 1818, Carl III of Sweden, Norway, is crowned King of Norway in Trondheim. 1822, Dom Pedro I declares Brazil independent from Portugal on the shores of the Ipiranga Brook in Sao Paulo. It actually became an empire with an emperor. And he's the one that invited Confederates to come and settle. He offered land grants. And in fact, they had a Confederate city that the last report I heard of it being basically operational was in the 1960s. 1856, the Saint-Marc Canal was inaugurated. 1857, the Mountain Meadows Massacre. Mormon settlers slaughter most members of a peaceful immigrant wagon train. You don't believe the way I want you to believe, we're going to kill you. 1860, Italian unification. Giuseppe Garibaldi enters Naples. 1863, American Civil War. Union troops under Quincy Gilmore capture Fort Wagner and Morris Island after a 7-week siege. 1864, American Civil War. Atlanta is evacuated on orders of Union General William Tecumseh Sherman, and he began his famous March to the Sea. 1876, Northfield, Minnesota. Jesse James and the James Younger gang attempt to rob the town's bank. But it turns out they rode into a hornet's nest, and the armed citizens drove them off. 1901, the Boxer Rebellion in the Qing Dynasty, modern-day China, officially ended with the signing of the Boxer Protocol. 1906, Alberto Santos Dumont flies his 14-bis aircraft at Bagatelle, France, successfully for the first time. 1907, Cunard Line's RMS Lusitania set sail on her maiden voyage from Liverpool, England, to New York City. 1909, Eugene Lefebvre crashes a new French-built Wright biplane during a test flight at Juvisy, south of Paris. Becomes the first aviator in the world to lose his life in a powered, heavier-than-air craft. Put that under the heading of Can't Win 'Em All. 1911, French poet Guillaume Apollinaire is arrested and put in jail on suspicion of stealing the Mona Lisa from the Louvre Museum. 1916, U.S. federal employees won the right to workers' compensation by Federal Employees Liability Act, 39 Statute 742, 5 U.S.C. 751. 1920, two newly purchased Savoia flying boats crash in the Swiss Alps en route to Finland, where they were to serve with the Finnish Air Force. The crews of both flying boats were killed. 1921, in Atlantic City, New Jersey, the first Miss America pageant, a two-day event, is held. 1921, Legion of Mary, the largest apostolic organization of laypeople in the Catholic Church, is founded in Dublin, Ireland. 1923, the International Criminal Police Organization, Interpol, is formed. 1927, the first fully electronic television system is achieved by Philo Farnsworth. 1929, the steamer Kourou capsizes and sinks on Lake Najahavari, near Tampere in Finland. 136 people die. 1932, the Battle of Boqueron, the first major battle in the Chaco War, begins on this date. 1936, the last Tylosine, a carnivorous marsupial by the name of Benjamin, dies alone in its cage in the Hobart Museum in Tasmania. 1940, Romania returns southern Dobruja to Bulgaria under the Treaty of Craiova. 1940, World War II, the German Luftwaffe begins the Blitz. Bombs London and other British cities for over 50 consecutive nights. 1942, World War II, Japanese Marines are forced to withdraw during the Battle of Milne Bay. 1943, a fire at the Gulf Hotel in Houston kills 55. Also in 1943, World War II, the German 17th Army begins its evacuation of the Kuban Bridgehead in the Taman Peninsula, and southern Russia moves across the Strait of Kerch to the Crimea. 1945, World War II, Japanese forces on Wake Island, which had held since December 41, surrender to U.S. Marines. 1945, the Berlin Victory Parade of 1945 is held on this date. 1953, Nikita Khrushchev is elected first secretary of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union. 1963, the Pro Football Hall of Fame opens in Canton, Ohio, has 17 charter members. 1965, during the Indo-Pakistani War, China announces it will reinforce its troops on the Indian border. 1965, Vietnam War. In a follow-up to August Operation Starlight, U.S. Marines and South Vietnamese forces initiate Operation Piranha in the Bantanggan Peninsula. 1970, fighting begins between Arab guerrillas and government forces in Jordan. 1970, Vietnam television was established. 1977, the Torrijos Carter treaties between Panama and the U.S. Are signed on this date. It dealt with the status of the Panama Canal. U.S. agrees to transfer control of the canal to Panama at the end of the 20th century. Omar Torrijos, who I knew, was a courteous thug, eventually killed by his own people. They put a bomb on his helicopter. And Jimmy Carter signed the treaty only because he was told to do so by his backers. 1977, a 300-meter-tall CKVR-DT transmission tower in Barrie, Ontario, Canada, is hit by a light aircraft during a fog. Causes the tower to collapse. All aboard the aircraft are killed. 1978, walking across Waterloo Bridge in London, Bulgarian dissident Georgi Markov is assassinated by Bulgarian secret police agent Francesco Galino by means of a ricin pellet fired from a specially designed umbrella. 1979, the Chrysler Corporation asked the U.S. government for $1.5 billion to avoid bankruptcy. I guess you could say that was corporate welfare. 1981, British plantation company Guthrie was taken over by the Malaysian government after successfully purchasing shares to become the major shareholder. This is famously called the Dawn Raid attack. 1984, an explosion on board a Maltese patrol boat disposing of illegal fireworks at sea off Gozo killed 7 soldiers and policemen. 1986, Desmond Tutu becomes the first black man to lead the Anglican Diocese of Cape Town. 1988, Abdu Ahad Mohammed, the first Afghan in space, returns to Earth after 9 days on the Mir space station. 1996, rapper and hip-hop artist Tupac Shakur is fatally shot in a drive-by shooting in Las Vegas, Nevada. He dies of his injury 6 days later. Of course, there are many, many rumors he survived and is hiding. 1997, maiden flight of the Lockheed Martin F-22 Raptor took place on this date. 1999, the 6.0 Athens earthquake affected the area with a maximum Mercalli intensity of 9. Killing 143, injuring 800 to 1,600, and left 50,000 people homeless. 2005, Egypt held its first ever multi-party presidential election. 2008, the U.S. government takes control of the two largest mortgage financing companies in the U.S., Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. A lot of stories about embezzlement. 2010, a Chinese fishing trawler collided with two Japanese Coast Guard patrol boats in disputed waters near the Senkaku Islands. 2011, a plane crash in Russia kills 43, including nearly the entire roster of the Lokomotiv Yaroslavl Continental Hockey League team. 2012, Canada officially cuts diplomatic ties with Iran by closing the embassy in Tehran and orders the expulsion of Iranian diplomats from Ottawa. This disagreement was over nuclear plans and reported human rights abuses. 2017, an 2017 Chiapas earthquake strikes southern Mexico. At least 60 are killed. They don't know how many were injured. 2017, Equifax announces a cybercrime identity theft event potentially impacting about 145.5 million U.S. consumers. 2019, Ukrainian filmmaker Oleg Sentsov and 66 others are released in a prisoner exchange between Ukraine and Russia. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Far too many to go into. Wish you could. This is Air Force Day in Pakistan. Christian Feast Day. Anastasius de Fuller. Clodoald. Gratus of Aosta. Stephen Pongratz. Marco Crizan. Regina. Earliest day in which National Grandparents Day can fall, September 13, is the latest. Celebrated on the first Sunday after Labor Day in the U.S. Last day when it's Labor Day in the U.S. can fall. September 1st is the first day. Celebrated on the first Monday of September. Constitution Day in Fiji. Independence Day in Brazil. Celebrates independence of Brazil from Portugal in 1822. In Ukraine, it's Military Intelligence Day. Now that's an oxymoron for you. National Threatened Species Day in Australia. And in Mozambique, it is Victory Day. Let's see what else we got. In 1251 BC, a solar eclipse on this date is said to mark the birth of Hercules at Thebes in Greece. In 1159, Ottaviano di Monticello elected anti-pope. In 1497, Flemish pretender Perkin Warbeck acclaimed as English King Richard IV on Bodmin Moor in Cornwall. In 1525, a trial against the heretic John Pistorius ends in The Hague. In 1543, Duke Wilhelm of Gulick surrenders to Emperor Charles IV, Charles V, the Holy Roman Emperor. 1566, Sultan Selim II succeeds to the Ottoman throne. 1596, the Dutch fleet bombards Bantin in Java. 1599, the Earl of Essex and the Irish rebel Tyrone sign a treaty. 1630, the city of Boston, Massachusetts is officially founded. 1652, the Battle of Monte Cristo. The Dutch fleet under J. van Galen beat the English. 1714, the Treaty of Baden is signed by the Holy Roman Empire in France. It ends the War of Spanish Succession. French retain Alsace and Landau. Austria gets the east bank of the Rhine. 1812, on this date, at the Battle of Borodino, Napoleon wins a Pyrrhic victory against Russian general Mikhail Kutuzov. It's the most ferocious battle of the Napoleonic era. 70,000 casualties. 1813, Uncle Sam is first used to refer to the U.S. by Troy Post of New York. In 1822, Pedro I is soon the son of King Joao VI, declared Brazil's independence from Portugal. 1863, a federal naval expedition arrives off Sabine Pass. 1871, in the Bay of Biscay, British warship the HMS Captain capsizes. 500 are killed. 1876, I talked about Jesse James and his gang. Well, on this date, Frank James and his gang are involved in a disastrous raid in Northfield, Minnesota. It results in the death or capture of a number of the gang members. Cole, Bob, and Jim Younger are arrested. I think Jesse got away. 1880, George Legowski patents a device to throw clay pigeons for trap shooters. 1888, Edith Eleanor McLean is the first baby to be placed in an incubator at State Immigrant Hospital on Ward's Island in New York. 1891, Captain Frederick Lugard's army reaches Cavalli in Equatoria. 1896, A.H. Whiting wins the first automobile race held on a closed circuit track in Cranston, Rhode Island. 1902, in Australia, the whole nation observes a day of humiliation and praise for rain. There's been a terrible drought that killed livestock and threatened crops. And on September 10th, rain began to fall. 1904, British forces in Tibet forced the 13th Dalai Lama to sign a treaty granting British trading posts in Tibet and a guarantee that Tibet will not concede territory to any foreign powers. And let's see what else we got, if anything. In 1936, Boulder Dam, now known as Hoover Dam after Herbert Hoover, our 31st president, begins its operation. And in the foundation are said to be quite a number of folks who died during the construction. Well, that being said, we're going to go and talk some more about secret underground bases. And there's a lot of them, let me tell you. Now, we were talking about the FEMA Alternate Underground Command Center off of Riggs Road, not far from Olney, Maryland. And back in the 1990s, only a few shabby, dilapidated buildings were visible through the security fence. But beneath the surface, it's said to run forever. Then, of course, there's Site R, also known as Raven Rock, or the underground Pentagon. It's about 6 miles north-northeast of Camp David. Now, Camp David, even though we're said it's just a few buildings and conference rooms for the president, is actually a massive underground facility. In Virginia, we have Mount Weather near Blue Mount, Virginia. It's the major underground command center for the FEMA. FEMA has a 400-acre complex on the surface of the mountain. And it's said the underground base is huge, actually qualifies as a high-tech subterranean town. And this base goes all the way back to 1950s. Then we have the Pentagon in Northern Virginia, the National Military Command Center across the Potomac from Washington, D.C. The Pentagon was built directly on the site of Robert E. Lee's former plantation, and it was done for a purpose. Now, there are multiple underground levels beneath the Pentagon. Just how deep that complex goes is not really known, but there are plans that date back to the 1960s to build a very deep base at the 3,500-foot level. And knowing the Army, as I do, if they've made a plan and they've allocated resources, they did it. Just like Project Horizon that I talked about. Then we have the U.S. Army Warrenton Training Stations, A and B. They're in the vicinity of Warrenton, Virginia. They're supposed to be U.S. Army facilities. But in actuality, there's a major CIA presence there. And you have to ask yourself what kind of operations take place there. Now, Station A is on Route 802. Station B is on Bear Wallow Road. And somewhere in that area are stations C and D. Now, according to Fletcher Prouty, who wrote Secret Team, he confirmed to an interviewer that the CIA was indeed present in Warrenton and was using the U.S. Army presence as just a cover. And he said what goes on there gets into the realm of special operations, and it's highly classified. But the entire locale is filled with tunnels. Now, there's something known as Camp Perry, also in Virginia. It's located a few miles from Colonial Williamsburg that I've been to a number of times. And in popular slang, it's referred to as the farm. It's the CIA's main training and operations base in the U.S., allegedly. And as with the Warrenton training station, the CIA uses a thin U.S. military cover at Camp Perry. Now, according to maps, Camp Perry is actually a U.S. Navy reservation. Now, immediately to the southeast of Perry lies the U.S. Navy's Cheatham Annex, a major weapons supply depot for the U.S. Navy's Atlantic Fleet, part of the Yorktown Naval Weapons Station. Now, there's a number of stories that they're more than rumors, but they're not confirmed fact. This came from a construction worker at that time, which was about 1960. The Navy was building a facility deep below the waterline. In fact, that whole area lies only a few feet above sea level, so the water table is very close to the surface. High-powered pumps were used to pump out the groundwater that would rush in as they were doing the building. And they used fast-setting concrete for the structure. But 60 years ago, the military engineers had the capability to build facilities below the waterline. Now, the Navy facility lies immediately adjacent to the CIA's Camp Perry, which is nominally part of the U.S. Navy reservation. Now, Camp David Presidential Retreat in Maryland is also administered by the Navy and lies above a major underground base. So there's a high probability that Camp Perry and Chatham Annex area along the York River is also honeycombed with an underground complex. Then in Washington, D.C., the White House has a very large, deeply buried facility underneath it. According to some people who went down to this facility during Johnson's administration in the 60s, she said she got an elevator in the White House and was escorted straight down. She thinks the elevator went down 17 levels. When the door opened, she was escorted down a corridor that appeared to disappear into the distance. Other doors and corridors opened off that particular corridor. You know, I've been in some of the tunnels underneath D.C. when I had cause to be there for a meeting, and it was unbelievable how extensive they were, and that's just what they let people into. In fact, research indicates Washington, D.C. has a veritable labyrinth of tunnels underneath it. Now, some of the tunnels are known, such as the metro tunnels, the underground train tunnels that I've been in. Members of Congress use them to travel from their office buildings to the Capitol building, but there are other tunnels said to be much more secret. Then in Texas, we have the Medina Annex at Lackland Air Force Base in San Antonio. This facility lies in southwest San Antonio on the south side of Route 90, immediately west of the junction of Interstate 410 and Route 90. It's one of the original Q areas built by the Pentagon back in the late 40s and 50s for storage and assembly of nuclear weapons. Local legend has it the underground portion is huge. And there's been rumors the underground base is very deep and very cold. You have to wonder why they allow it to be cold. They certainly have the technology to warm it. NSA has a major presence at the Medina Annex with thousands of personnel. And we, in northwest San Antonio, we have Camp Bullis, not far from Interstate Highway 10. Now, this is an Army training base immediately adjacent to Camp Stewart, another Army base that has a much lower profile. According to rumor, Camp Bullis, Camp Stewart, a reservation, is the site of a deep underground base. In near Killeen, Texas, 70 miles north of Austin, you have Fort Hood. Now, this was one of the original Q areas. The area of Fort Hood and of the former Killeen and Gray Air Force bases is the site of a secret underground complex. According to one soldier who was stationed there, whose duty area was at a checkpoint 2 miles inside a tunnel leading to an underground area near the former Gray Air Force base. Nobody really knows how deep or how extensive the tunnels are. Then in Nebraska, of course, we have Offutt Air Force Base. It's got a major underground facility and has had it for decades. During the Cold War, it was underground command center for the Strategic Air Command. It was known as the Hole. George W. Bush was taken there for protection on Air Force One during the 9/11 attacks. And in New Mexico, since the late 40s, there's been a major underground base at Kirtland Air Force Base. That base is beneath the foothill of the Manzano Mountains, originally constructed as a super-secret nuclear weapons assembly and storage facility for the military. Today, that base is used by other agencies. The Air Force has built another state-of-the-art facility for nuclear weapons storage in another location at Kirtland. The Department of Energy's Sandia National Laboratory is immediately adjacent to Kirtland Air Force Base on the southeast border of Albuquerque. I've talked to a number of people who've been up in the mountains and talk about the copper doors. Behind those copper doors are numerous nuclear weapons ready to go. One of the men that helped build the Manzano base in the years after World War II spent his entire career as a hard rock miner for federal agencies working on underground projects all over the western U.S. While excavating the Manzano base, security was extremely high. The miners were blindfolded when they were transported to and from their work site. And when they were taken from the area where they were working to another part of the facility, they were always blindfolded. The practical result of this procedure was not even the miners that built the base knew its layout. All they ever saw was the immediate chamber or tunnel section they were currently working on. This was what was called a strictly compartmentalized project in every sense of the word. And in all likelihood, it's been expanded greatly over the years. Then we have Los Alamos, one of the U.S. Department of Energy's National Research Laboratories. It's to the west of the state capital of Santa Fe. According to rumor, the underground workspace between Los Alamos is even greater in extent than a sprawling surface facility. And it goes as much as a mile deep in its furthest reaches. Now, two of the main missions of Los Alamos are nuclear and genetic research. And it said a number of classified projects related to these fields are among the secret activities carried out underground. Then we have Wright Sands Missile Range in south central New Mexico, largest military base in the U.S. The site of the first test explosion of an atomic bomb in 1945. And there's some strange creatures said to wander the sands of Wright Sands. It was also the launch site for test firing of captured Nazi V-2 rockets after the military defeated the Third Reich. Now, it's still an operational military missile range and serves as an alternate space shuttle landing site for NASA. Underground facilities beneath White Sands are said to be devoted to cutting-edge research in lasers and conscious supercomputing. All research indicates there's a major underground component at White Sands. Then in Nevada, we've got the famous Area 51 and the Tonopah Test Range, or the Nevada Test Site, S4, Nellis Air Force Base reservations in southern Nevada, all relatively close proximity to each other. All research says there's a major, massive underground facility in this region. A great deal of ultra-sensitive military R&D takes place there. A lot of popular lore has arisen about the theme of captured UFOs held in secret by the military at Area 51. And best research indicates most of these rumors are true. And there's a number of researchers that have accumulated a great deal of evidence over the years indicates the American military agencies are lying that they, and in fact they do have captured UFOs. And Area 51 is reportedly one of the places where this sort of technology is taken and hidden and studied. White Sands Missile Range in New Mexico is another site. And of course, let's not forget Wright-Patterson, where much of it originates. Then in Colorado, we have Cheyenne Mountain near Colorado Springs. It was the major underground command center for NORAD during the Cold War. and it's a very deep, highly secret base. While Cheyenne Mountain is still in use, most of NORAD's daily operations have now been switched to Peterson Air Force Base in Colorado. The Cheyenne Mountain underground base has been featured in many motion pictures and television programs. Let's not forget Stargate Atlantis. Then we got the Denver Federal Center on the western edge of the Denver metropolitan area. It's the location of a FEMA underground command center. Now, a lot of folks are concerned about the Denver airport as being the site of an alleged underground base, but in all likelihood, the more important base is the Denver Federal Center installation. Then in Tennessee, we got the Naval Support Activity Mid-South. It's a huge U.S. Navy base in Millington, Tennessee. That's 21 miles north of Memphis. And this is an enormous facility covering thousands of acres. And there's said to be a deep underground facility beneath the base. Remember, the U.S. Navy operates and maintains Camp David, which is also the site of a major underground facility. Then in California, we have China Lake, a massive U.S. Navy R&D reservation in eastern California. It's long been rumored to be the site of a major underground base. Now, a lot of research that's been done comes down on the side of a massive complex beneath the China Lake Naval Weapons Center. That's the general vicinity of the town of Ridgecrest, California. Reported massive deep underground installations are said to run out of Nevada and into eastern California. And so much of that area is controlled by federal departments and agencies, either the Pentagon, Department of Interior, Department of Agriculture, Department of Energy, Bureau of Land Management, or a number of unknown agencies, as in the case of Area 51. In fact, that entire area of the country is essentially one large federal government multi-agency reservation. There are numerous military bases that sprawl across the landscape, and then there are national forests, national monuments, and other lands under federal control. So they can move almost any necessary personnel and equipment around without attracting any undue attention. Now, I've just given you a brief overview of some of the underground bases. There are many more than certainly on my list. Many of these installations are gargantuan. One expert once said an excavated underground space he's familiar with was inside a mountain. It was 1,000 feet high, 600 feet wide, and 1,000 feet long. We're faced with a global system that's so secretive and so wildly out of control that the vast majority of us don't have any earthly clue as to what's going on. Now, there's a number of people who are alleged to have been escorted down into secret or highly secure underground facilities. Almost all the stories began with the individual telling it taking a long, deep elevator ride. So you have to ask yourself, how deep do elevators go? Well, documentation and open literature suggest elevators can go anywhere from hundreds to thousands of feet down based on the capability of high-rise elevators built by companies like Otis and ThyssenKrupp. Now, there's been undocumented, shall we say, information from time to time suggests that some facilities go even deeper, maybe many miles deep. Now, keep in mind an elevator system that's installed in an interior elevator well and goes to the top of a high building could just as easily be installed in a vertical shaft and go straight down into the ground. And multiple elevators could be staggered on multiple levers to go down and down as deeply as you care to go. Otis Elevator Company announced in 2002 they planned to install high-speed skyway elevators in a new 880-foot-tall Eureka Tower in Melbourne, Australia. It goes up to 1,800 feet per minute. It also planned to install its innovative Generation 2 flat-belted elevator hoist system on that same project. That utilizes a permanent magnet machine. It's quieter and takes up less space than a traditional elevator machine room. Then there was another article referred to a mile-high multi-directional elevator being developed for Otis Elevator Company to be used in extremely tall buildings in the future. So, obviously, if a company can develop a mile-high elevator, it can develop a mile-deep elevator. Now, you have to ask yourself, What's the purpose of all this? I mean, it's got to cost trillions of dollars. But remember, the federal government can't find $121 trillion. It's vanished into the black budgets. Now, deep beneath the National Security Agency headquarters at Fort Meade, halfway between Washington, D.C. and Baltimore, is a top-secret subterranean complex. James Branford makes a reference to it in his book, The Puzzle Palace. He said the NSA's enormous basement, which stretches for city blocks beneath the headquarters operations building, undoubtedly holds the largest, most advanced computer operation in the world. And this is the digital machinery the NSA uses to eavesdrop on electronic communications the world over, including everything in the U.S. According to James Branford, the basement is full of supercomputers that extend for city blocks. Now, according to another source, for years, the U.S. Navy had a huge base at China Lake, California. And there's documentation from 1964 indicating the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers was considering constructing a huge underground cavity 4,000 feet deep beneath the China Lake facility. And leaks from an individual that used to be stationed there said the deepest part of that underground facility goes down 1 mile. And it's used for weapons. Weapons more powerful than nuclear weapons is the phrase that was used. Apparently, there's a new generation of secret, highly secure weaponry that exceeds the destructive power of atomic and hydrogen bombs. You got to wonder what kind of weapons we're talking about. Now, China Lake has long been a major weapons research and development center for the Navy. And then, of course, I mentioned White Sands. The U.S. Army's enormous missile test firing range sprawls for many miles across the desolate desert hills and craggy mountain ranges of southern New Mexico. Now, there have always been rumors about underground facilities and work going on beneath White Sands. Some contractors who were working there mentioned they had been hired to drill 10 or 12 inch dam or holes down about 800 or 1,000 feet. And the drills broke through many times and cold air came rushing out the hole. So if that's not the indication of the underground facilities that needed air shafts, I don't know what it is. New Mexico's prime real estate for clandestine underground facilities, and of course White Sands is right at the top of that list. Now, you may ask how folks get transferred around in this massive underground labyrinth. And there is a story about super secret, high speed, deeply buried maglev trains. They go back and forth deep beneath the North American continent. Bill Hamilton, who I knew for many years when I was in California, had a secondhand account that a friend of his talked to him about. He said the underground shuttles were very fast, less than 1 hour from Cheyenne Mountain entrance to the Pentagon. That's all the way across the country, folks. That's over 2,000 miles an hour, and you don't feel the speed because you're fully enclosed in what amounts to a tin can with no windows. But there's stuff that's much faster than that, but it's not underground. There's no gravitational pull when you take off in a bus or train. It doesn't suddenly go 2,000 miles an hour, but it does build up faster than you'd think. And you don't have to wear any seatbelts. Warning lights let you know that you'll be leaving the other end when you're arriving at a slowdown speed. If you're in a plane going 600 miles an hour, you get up and walk up down the aisle, and you don't have any indication how fast you're going. Same thing is true with these maglev trains. Now, I talked to a number of people online about Burlington, Massachusetts, and some of the stories up there. A good friend of mine has spent time there. And one of the stories came from a gentleman who, when he graduated from college, took a job with a U.S. federal agency. His work routine was odd. He'd go into a perfectly ordinary-looking building in the Burlington, Massachusetts area, that's not far north of Boston, and take a long elevator ride down to a secret underground laboratory. In the laboratory's working, they were testing radioactive material and their effects on other materials. Now, it's interesting to note this secret underground elevator began in a very normal-looking building, down to an underground work area, and the existence of a secret laboratory deep beneath a major metropolitan area. Now, most interesting of all was his description of some of the folks he worked with, senior engineers, technicians, and scientists who spent most of their time in this underground facility. Bizarrely, some of them were missing minor body parts. One man is missing a nose, another part of a hand. Apparently, according to what he could pick up, they had sacrificed parts of their bodies due to radiation burns in order to advance the nuclear research of the Cold War's military-industrial complex. I don't care how dedicated I would be. I'm not going to sacrifice body parts. Now, we also have to think about the fact that this is not the only country in the world with underground facilities. There are stories that there's a mammoth secret underground base built inside a hollow mountain in Norway. And the apparently it had some U.S. military personnel on its staff. And they let slip to others they knew about this facility. Now, there was a NATO war game, part of which took place in Norway. It's called Operation Battle Griffin. And some of our personnel that took part in that was sent to do some work inside one of several hollowed-out mountains in the country of Norway. And before leaving to go to the mountain, according to the story, they were briefed and inspected, which is unusual for a work detail. And they were told not to try to see where they were going or what roads they were taking. And they couldn't take any cameras, of course, and nothing considered confidential could leave the mountains. Only Norwegian military personnel knew exactly where the base was. This was the roads crisscross in a maze pattern designed to confuse enemy tank drivers. So our personnel were put in the back of a truck in darkness. The truck was covered completely. After driving for a while, they came to a stop and heard the sound of doors opening. And they actually drove into the mountain. And a couple of minutes inside the mountain, and then they stopped. The place was absolutely gigantic. The smallest area was the entrance, which could take a main battle tank. The area they were working in was 300 yards long and about 30 yards or so wide and about 40 feet or more high. It was so big you couldn't feel claustrophobic. And the whole cavity was lined in white plastic type material. Well, you have to ask yourself, what kind of technology do we really have? Because most technology you see in operations, as I've said before, is two generations out of date. Now, this next story comes from a member of the Army Corps of Engineers, and it happened during the Vietnam War era. Part of his training on American soil prior to going to Southeast Asia, he was sent briefly on a tour of a couple of underground bases on the East Coast. He said they were sealed up from the outside world, and they could seal themselves rapidly within tenths of a second. Massive multi-ton reinforced doors like those on bank vaults would slam shut virtually instantaneously. If you ought to be standing in the doorway, give it up. It all happened too fast for anybody to react in time to escape death. Food supply came from hydroponic gardens and the underground bases, so they could grow food in the event of prolonged periods of isolation from the outside world. Now, by implication, there are contingency plans for surviving underground for the long term, sealed off from the outside world. And these plans have been in existence since at least the late 60s. Now, there's another story. Came out of Denver. A young man said he had been quietly approached during the 80s by officials from the Reagan administration. They were inquiring about obtaining non-hybrid fertile heirloom seeds from the Native American varieties of food crops indigenous to the western states. They wanted to take these seeds into storage in an underground facility that they were building in one of the national forests in California. Now, I've long heard about underground seed storage areas. In fact, many records are in abandoned salt mines in the Midwest. The reasoning by these people, the original Native American food crop varieties had more vigor and produced better crops under adverse climate conditions than did the more inbred varieties of seeds available in the commercial market. And the event of a catastrophe that disrupted growing conditions, such as nuclear war, they wanted seed varieties that would dependably produce at least some food so that agriculture could be reestablished when people came out of their underground labyrinths. Another story came from a man who said he had knowledge of an unusual underwater project in the Atlantic Ocean. Turned out that when he said the project was in the Atlantic, he meant it was located somewhere in the Atlantic Ocean basin. And that, of course, potentially included bays and gulfs and straits, channels and seas that comprise the Great Atlantic Basin. Now, he eventually specified the project was under the seabed of the Gulf of Mexico. And at Parsons, the engineering firm, was a contractor. He said Parsons had purchased some specialty equipment intended for operation 2,800 feet beneath the sea floor. Now, this was in 1997. He thought the work was somewhere in the eastern part of the Gulf. Wasn't really certain. Now, this equipment routinely was used in the underground mining and excavation industries. And the order from Parsons for an underground project aroused his curiosity enough to ask a few questions. He was told the equipment was intended for a deep project beneath the bottom of the Gulf of Mexico. He didn't know what the purpose of the project was. He also mentioned other companies that also bought that same equipment from his company for use underwater. And the equipment was distinctive enough that it clearly presupposes the presence of live human beings in the place where it was installed. Now, there's no way to really prove or disprove whether or not a deep facility built by Parsons is under the seafloor of the Gulf of Mexico. But a story like this does actually raise a host of questions. Parsons is one of the premier underground construction firms in the U.S., and it does do underground construction and tunneling for a broad range of major corporations and government agencies. And research has shown that the Gulf of Mexico has been the focus of a considerable amount of deep-sea drilling by the petroleum industry, as well as by academic and government oceanographers and geologists. There's even been discussion in the literature of excavating huge caverns beneath the floor of the Gulf of Mexico to store petroleum. It's also true that the seabed of the Gulf of Mexico is covered with scores of salt domes that could be perfectly suitable for subsea excavation construction of the deeply buried man and subsea floor bases. Now, there's no way a company like Parsons would go ahead and do it on its own. This project would be well within the capability of a wealthy, powerful, technologically advanced company such as Parsons, but it would take someone like the U.S. government to ask him to do it. And it wouldn't be overly problematic to excavate caverns beneath the Gulf of Mexico and put something in them besides petroleum. And something else could be almost anything: a secret genetic engineering laboratory, a clandestine prison, a human clone production facility, A CIA cocaine warehouse for illegal narcotics in transit between Latin America and the multi-billion dollar North American market. Any number of projects could make use of these underground facilities. There's even been stories from the Puerto Rican coastal waters of U.S. Navy activities that are consistent with the possible construction of one or more subsea floor bases off the coast of Puerto Rico. In fact, it would appear, based on rumors, that there are multiple clandestine manned high-tech facilities buried beneath the floor of the Gulf of Mexico. And it's all likelihood clandestine U.S. military units are involved there, along with one or more major petroleum companies and other agencies as well. Now, these facilities could even house elements of the shadowy world of organized crime and the ever-present feared neo-Nazi groups that had been at the core of American military-industrial espionage since the Project Paperclip in the 40s. Thousands of ex-Nazis were brought to the U.S. after World War II and inserted into positions of influence at the Pentagon, at NASA, and in what was called private industry. And they did their jobs well. They went to work networking with each other as they infiltrated the innards of the American military-industrial espionage complex from inside out. The Nazi imprint on the world didn't die with the cessation of open conflict between the Axis and Allied powers in 1945. In fact, the Nazi movement just morphed a little bit and slithered off into another layer across the ocean, insinuating itself into the darkest recesses of a compartmentalized secrecy, waiting for the day it can burst forth in all its splendor, for lack of a better term. So why do we have all this secrecy and clandestine underground and underwater activity? Many feel Armageddon's coming. Is the apocalypse right around the corner? Nobody's told us. Do the clandestine movement and shakers inside the military-industrial complex know something the rest of us don't? Maybe this is one of the reasons for these massive underground bases. And no matter who you ask, you're going to get an evasive answer. Seems at least some, and maybe many, underground underwater bases and tunnels are preparations for a number of potential possibilities. Nuclear war, change in physics of rotation of the Earth, maybe a pole shift, reversal of the Earth's magnetic field, a galactic dust cloud we'll fly into, asteroid or comet strikes, we have an asteroid on the way. Massive sudden climate change, social, political, or economic chaos resulting from anything, and a combination of one or more. In other words, very dramatic events may be just around the corner. And the powers that be are getting ready to weather the storm. It seems that those in the know are, in fact, making massive, extremely expensive preparations for something, and I doubt they'd spend all that money unless they had a very good indication of what that something was. Well, on this note, we've run out of time. We'll be back tomorrow, and once again, we'll be talking more about secret underground bases. Till then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.